नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय So we're doing the last few verses, ten or so verses of the ninth chapter of this Canto 7, Pallad pacifies the Lord with prayers. And we were discussing the very wonderful Vaishnavas, especially in our line, in the line of Srila Prabhupada, the what do you call it? You have the Bhajanandis and the Goshanandis. So the Goshanandis, those who preach. And of course, Prahlad Maharaj felt very compassionate. He was not worried about his own welfare, but about the welfare of those trying to make plans to be happy in this material world. But you know, we also have to understand that such personalities as Gaurakishore Das Babaji, who, you know, apparently were in a Bhajanandi mood, but we see that with Srila Gaurakishore Das Babaji, you know, out of his desire also to help others go back to Godhead, he prayed for the Lord to send a wonderful preacher who actually manifests himself in the form of Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. Sometimes out of humility, deep humility, a Vaishnava has the same compassion as like Prahlad Maharaj, but they may feel that they're not qualified to deliver others or to accept disciples. We see that Lokanath Das Goswami, did not want to accept any disciples. But Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had asked Narottam Das Thakur to go to Lokanath Goswami and accept him as a spiritual master, but that didn't happen. And then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had to appear to Lokanath Goswami and tell him that he must accept at least one disciple. So, these great personalities, of course, it's interesting that, you know, in our line, some of the Bhajanandi Vaishnavas, their disciples were the most prominent preachers, and they prayed for such a person to come and deliver. So sometimes we should be very careful of not considering, you know, of considering perhaps, you know, a Bhajanandi, apparently Bhajanandi type of Vaishnava to be less or, you know, in view. We shouldn't think like in those terms. There are different moods, but sometimes out of deep humility, they don't feel that they're qualified to deliver so many people by the preaching, or even to accept even one disciple, or even to be a guru. but by their prayers, they pray to Krishna for such a person to come. And by their prayers, these personalities like Narottam Das Thakur and Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur and Srila Prabhupada, etc., you know, appear. So, yeah. So we were discussing, and this Krishna consciousness movement, of course, you know, it's a little difficult to be a Bhajananandi devotee in ISKCON, because it is set up for helping others to go back to the spiritual world, to preaching Krishna consciousness. Yeah.
Prabhu mentioned the example of Lord Krishna Das Babaji is being Bhajanandi still, not too, we should appropriately discriminate rather. But in general, still, Bhajanandi are, they are still devotees, and they are on still a higher platform than what we are trying to do. So what I'm coming to is, where do they fall under the in the ladder of Kanishtha Adhikari, Madhyama Adhikari, Uttam Adhikari, if they are not preaching?
Well, you can a Bhajananandi can be, you know, be in Kanishtha, Madhyam, and then Uttama. So they can, you know, take shelter of a Bhajananandi Vaishnava and as a neophyte devotee, then gradually elevate to Madhyam and Uttama Adhikari. So they can go all through all different stages of a Vaishnava as well. But just like a Goshinandi, you know, they can be Kanishtha, Madhyam and Uttama. So but you know, there may be there are many Bhajananandis. I mean, in our line, those coming in the line of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, those who apparently manifest a significant Bhajananandi mood, still in our line, they're extremely compassionate and you know, concerned, like Prahlad. They have the exact same concern, like Prahlad, for the conditioned souls. But so the Bhajananandi is coming in our line of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu may be different in one sense from Bhajananandis not coming in the line of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who are more concerned with their own spiritual advancement. You see? So, you know, a Bhajananandi devotee in the line of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is, you know, we follow Prahlad Maharaj, we follow Srimad Bhagavatam. But there are other Bhajananandis who may not, you know, there are other Vaishnavas who don't take the same interest in Srimad Bhagavatam as we do in the line of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And because we take interest in the Srimad Bhagavatam, we tend to pick up on the mood of Prahlad Maharaj and personalities like that. But there are a lot of Vaishnavas who, you know, are not even so interested in Krishna. You know, they're interested in Narayan and what have you, you see. So that type of Bhajananandi. So there's a big difference, you know. So Bhajananandis can vary a lot. But especially in the line of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, there's a very strong Goshinandi mood, and even the Bhajananandi predominant devotees still extremely compassionate, because they take that mood of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So we follow, we pick up on the mood of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who's extremely compassionate. So even the Bhajananandis in our line, you know, their compassion is exactly the same as Prahlad Maharaj, but they just may not feel that they're qualified to accept disciples and preach and what have you. So they may pray for someone to do that. So, yeah. But they would be quite superior to Bhajananandis not in the life of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who, you know, are interested in going back to the spiritual world by Kunta, like that, you know. Yeah. So that's why, just to explain that, you know, we have to be a little careful not to, you know, especially in our line, to discriminate one as higher or lower. In the general sense, from what it appears, you know, when Prabhupada mentions Bhajananandi, he mentions it in a general sense, perhaps those wanting to go back to Vaikuntha, you know, like that, and they may not necessarily have that strong mood coming from Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Because, you know, the difference with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, of course, is that he is in the mood of Radharani, who is compassion personified. You know, that the compassionate side of Krishna is manifested, personified in Srimati Radharani, very soft and receptive to others. you know, Radharani's prayer. Asla shaba paladitam vanastam ambadasanam mamadam kurudva yatatatava vidatulam padu matpananathas to save and apraha. That I know no one else but Krishna as my Lord, and he shall remain so even if he hounds me roughly by his embrace or makes me broken hearted by not being present before me. He's completely free to do anything and everything, for he was always my worshipful Lord unconditionally. So, Srimati Radharani, her mood is that if someone else can bring happiness to Krishna, then I will become that person's servant. If Krishna is becomes happy because one of the fallen souls is delivered from the material world back to the spiritual world, I will, you know, take up that service. So, because her concern is Krishna's happiness, you know, that is the essential motivation of a Gosyanandi, is that they're more concerned with Krishna's happiness. That he's saying in the Bhagavad Gita, you know, one who preaches is very dear to me. That's what brings that you know, in other words, that brings me happiness. Very dear. They bring me so much joy and happiness. So therefore devotees pick up on that mood that if it brings Krishna happiness, then let me preach. And that's Radharani's mood. You know, you can handle me roughly and embrace a fallen soul from the material world. But if that brings you happiness, then let me do that. You know, it's a common complaint that devotees have, you know, in ISKCON, that I guess whether it's in other... But, you know, we're a preaching movement. We spend a lot of time preaching, but if you become a devotee, they lose interest in you. Yeah. And the longer you're around, the less they care about you, unless you have some, you know, unless there's some benefit. But but not everyone is like that. You know, but Krishna's mood, the devotee, that's the Gosyanandi. Krishna becomes happy that this fallen soul is delivered back to the spiritual world. Then if that's Krishna's happiness, then let Krishna embrace that fallen soul, not me. So that's the Gosyanandi. So it is based upon Krishna's, you know, mood. What's that?
In terms of the compassionate nature, I was just thinking, what about the institutions, they don't worship Chaitanya Mahaprabhu or even Radharani? Where do they get the compassion?
Yeah, I mean, compassion is there to a certain degree, but there's no more compassionate magnanimous manifestation of Krishna than Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is in the mood of Radharani, and that's why he takes Radharani, Prabhupada says, is a manifestation, the personification of Krishna's compassion. So so therefore, Krishna wants the conditioned souls delivered. He says that in the Gita. That brings him happiness. And the topmost devotee are more concerned with Krishna's happiness than their own, and therefore they want to deliver the conditioned souls. that compassionate nature is like in Śrīmad Rādhārāṇī, Krishna's full manifestation of compassion finds its perfection in the form of Śrīmad Rādhārāṇī. It is there. Every spirit soul has that quality of compassion, or not wanting to see others suffer or unhappy. But when we're in the association of those who have that quality to such a very deep, intense level, then it increases our compassionate nature as well. Just like if you're in the association of someone who's very happy, it increases your own happiness. You might be, even if someone's generally a bit morose and what have you, but if you're in the association of someone who just has a powerful sense of happiness, then it just rubs off and you become like that. So compassion is like that as well. So in the presence of Śrīmati Radharani, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, those devotees coming in that line, then you really pick up on that. Although every spirit soul has that innately to some degree or another, but it in the association of exalted personalities, it becomes manifest to the fullest degree possible. Those pastimes. Is that Adarya, I think? I think that's a Sanskrit word, Adarya. And we're seeing that that move in Prahlad Maharaj, and these teachings of Prahlad Maharaj are very, very crucial to our the Krishna consciousness mood that we develop as devotees. Yeah. As a preaching movement, we've gone through many different prayers, what have you, but as you can see in these prayers of Prahlad Maharaj, the beautiful qualities of a humble devotee and fixed up in the service of the Lord and prepared to go to hell, but always concerned, not concerned for one's own self, but always concerned for others. So, this is so far, this is the greatest degree of level that we've heard, which is a very predominant theme in Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's movement, which is a very predominant theme in Krishna. So Prabhupada is saying here, our Krishna consciousness movement is established for this, for what Prahlad Maharaj is saying. So these prayers are crucial to why this movement is here at all, especially to help others to go back to Godhead. And by doing that, we benefit automatically. So if someone doesn't quite understand Prahlad Maharaj's Vaishnava qualities, and his preaching mood, his self-sacrificing nature for Krishna's happiness and for preaching, and his ability to perceive Krishna in everything, even in the utilization of everything in the material world. this Prabhupada says, utility is the principle. You can't do that without Krishna consciousness. So as we've gone through Prahlad Maharaj's, everything you need as a devotee, to a full-fledged Krishna conscious devotee in ISKCON, in the Sankirtan movement, under the shelter of Srila Prabhupada, the Acharyas, that is there in these prayers of Prahlad. The humility, very essential. Lord Chaitanya says, Trinadapi Sanichana. The preaching, as Krishna says, there's no one more dear to me than him, that is my happiness. And then, in order to preach, one has to be able to go out into the material energy and utilize everything and never forget Krishna and help everyone to remember Krishna and to perceive Krishna everywhere. You know, so Prabhupada went from Vrindavan to New York, but as far as he was concerned, he never left Vrindavan. You know, he was always with Krishna like that. So this is what we're getting from Prahlad. Ordinarily, one who's not a strong preacher, they struggle to see Krishna in, Krishna can be sort of lost to them. What do I do? You know, where is Krishna? What does Krishna want? So everything is here very nicely in Prahlad's prayers. So then, so we're up to this verse. So that's a little summary of where we're up to. And so verse 45, very famous verse. Sex life is compared to the rubbing of two hands to relieve an itch. Grihasthas, so-called Grihasthas, who have no spiritual knowledge, think that this itching is the greatest platform of happiness, although actually it is a source of all distress. The creepiness, the fools, who are just the opposite of Brahmanas, are not satisfied by repeated sensuous enjoyment. Those who are dearer, however, who are sober and who tolerate this itching are not subject to the sufferings of fools and rascals. Is that verse in the Bhagavad Gita? Karapanya dosha bahata subhava prachamitam tamasamuda chitaha. Yes, chitapriya shanishtitam ruvitanmi sishastiham sevam tam prapanam. Arjuna said to Krishna that now I've lost all composure because of miserly weakness, kripna. In this condition, I'm asking you to tell me clearly what is best for me. Now I am your disciple and a soul surrendered unto you. So he understood that this sense of looking after my own sense gratification is the miserly platform of life. Like the cats and the dogs. One should not quit this world like cats and dogs with no interest in self-realization. They're just very miserly. The cats and dogs are like symbols of... they're very dear to the non-devotees, the materialists, the cats and dogs. Because they see in them that they're very expert at what they would like to be doing. Just, spend each day just absorbed in your own sense gratification without any concern for anyone else. So they admire that, you know, how expert these cats and dogs are. But they're creepiness, they're very miserly, they're not concerned with others. But the Brahmanas, they're the opposite. They're, Brahmana means big-hearted, broad-minded. They detach themselves from their own sense of sense gratification, personal happiness and distress, and they look after the welfare of others, all spirits, seeing everyone as a spirit soul somehow needs to be liberated from the material world, from that cycle of sense gratification, and birth and death. And now, Srila Prabhupada says something very interesting here in the purport. This is generally found everywhere, right? This happiness of the senses, especially the genitals. And specifically found in the Western world, where there are regular arrangements to satisfy sex life in different ways. However, this has not made anyone happy. Even the hippies who have given up all the material comforts of their fathers and grandfathers cannot give up the sensational happiness of sex life. So that's interesting, isn't it? So Prabhupada did acknowledge that they had given up a lot of materialistic comforts. So that detachment he noted. And quite often when people think of hippies in those days, because, you know, there was a lot of free sex and that, you know, it'd be very difficult for people to see them as, you know, having detachment. But Prabhupada saw that, you know, he considered in different ways, he commented that that part was already there in them. But it was not expected that they could give up sex life. And of course, but he did acknowledge that the detachment was there in the hippies. That they gave up a lot of materialistic comforts, that they, you know, they were wealthy, a lot of them from wealthy backgrounds, you know. In the West, a lot of them, compared to many countries in the world, that they had, you know, coming from nice big homes with cars and money, you know, everything they wanted was there. But still, they couldn't give up the sex life. But that doesn't mean that there was no detachment there. That's acknowledged. Mm. But he's saying, so therefore, you know, even such persons as the hippies, still they couldn't give it up. You know, so with their detachment. Such persons are described here as creepers and misers. The human form of life is a great asset. From this life, one can fulfill the goal of existence. So, Prabhupada is saying the human form of life is a great asset because if we have something that's of great value, but we don't utilize it for its full benefit, then that's what misers sometimes do. Sometimes they have wealth, and although they can use that wealth very generously for their benefit and for others' benefit, sometimes they just hoard it, stash it under the mattress, put it in a bank. There was a cartoon, Scrooge McDuck. I think it was Donald Duck's grandfather. I don't know if anyone saw that. But he had big cash on it. He just had mountains of coins in one room, and he'd swim in the coins, the gold coins. He'd swim in. But he was Scrooge McDuck. Scrooge McDuck. You know, wouldn't spend a penny, but he had mountains of that. So to have the human form of life and to be very miserly how we use it. Now, I'll just use it for a little bit of sense gratification, that's it. It's miserly, you know, for my benefit, not for others. I could use my human body for the benefit of others as well, but no. Although that facility is there, I'll just use it for a little bit of sense gratification for myself. So, it's considered miserly. So Prabhupada is using that word asset. So Srila Prabhupada, you know, quotes the verse from Jamunacharya that since I have been engaged in the transcendental loving service of Krishna, realizing ever new pleasure in him, whenever I think of sex pleasure, I spit at the thought and my lips curl with distaste. You know, one time Srila Prabhupada was sitting in an airport, and this woman sort of sat somewhere opposite Prabhupada, you know, in a very alluring sort of manner. And Prabhupada, his lips curled up and he just spat into the air, literally. So Prahlad Maharaj, he's describing, you know, in this world, people are generally trying to enjoy happiness in this life. And doors open, come in. And he compares this, you know, this sex life as something that everyone in this world is interested in. So it's like an itch, indicating that sometimes when there's an itch, the thing to do is to just tolerate it, because, you know, if you scratch the itch, you know, sometimes you can do a little scratch on an itch, but sometimes that, you know, an itch is, the more you try and scratch it, the more it will itch, and better to not scratch it, better to tolerate it. So, he's describing the two different types of persons in this world, that those interested in the sex life, and you know, the sober persons, the Brahmana type persons, who are
They're fixing the door
downstairs. Yeah. Are they having a meeting next door? A dance?
Yeah, they are.
They're having a meeting?
Theater.
Yeah.
In theater.
And so this is a good time to fix the door?
I was thinking.
Who's fixing it?
I don't know, but Achintya Pramantri said they'll be done in a couple of minutes.
Yeah. Okay. Text 46. O Supreme Personality of Godhead, there are 10 prescribed methods on the path to liberation. So for those who want to rise above this sense gratification, to remain silent, not to speak to anyone, to observe vows, to amass all kinds of Vedic knowledge, to undergo austerities, to study the Vedas and other Vedic literatures, to execute the duties of Varnashram Dham, to explain the Shastras, to stay in a solitary place, to chant mantras silently, and to be absorbed in trance. These different methods for liberation are generally only a professional practice and means of livelihood for those who have not conquered their senses. Because such persons are falsely proud, these procedures may not be successful. So Srila Prabhupada quotes Srimad Bhagavatam 6.1.15. Only a rare person who has adopted complete unalloyed devotional service to Krishna can uproot the weeds of sinful actions with no possibility that they will revive. He can do this simply by discharging devotional service, just as the sun can immediately dissipate fog by its rays. So this is, of course, from pastimes of Ajamil. The real purpose of the human life is to attain liberation from material entanglement. Such liberation may be achieved by many methods, but all of them more or less depend on tapasya, austerity, which begins with celibacy. Sukadeva Goswami says that those who are Vasudeva Parayana, who have fully surrendered to the lotus feet of Lord Vasudeva, Krishna, automatically achieve the results of Mona, Vrata and other such methods simply by discharging devotional service. In other words, these methods are not so powerful. If one takes to devotional service, all of them are very easily performed. So, Prahlad Maharaj has constantly emphasized take up bhakti yoga. In the previous verse, he's explained that in this world, very, very difficult, you know, people try to become disentangled from sense gratification, but especially the sex desire is something that will hold one to this material world. It's very almost impossible to give up. And these different types of prescribed methods to attain liberation from sense gratification and sinful activity are generally not very strong, and therefore people, you know, ultimately don't actually achieve liberation through them, but you know, in the process of taking them up, it can be quite lucrative as a profession, as a livelihood. You know, having failed to actually control the senses, they may just enjoy the facility of being known as a very, you know, a person on the path of liberation. So Prahlad Maharaj is emphasizing devotional service because, as Prabhupada quoted the Srimad Bhagavatam, that actually that's the only way really that the weeds, you know, the desire for sense gratification can be eradicated, because as long as that desire remains in the heart, it will surface again, sense gratification. So Prabhupada describes some of these different qualities, such as mona, he explains how, so, you know, he's explained that if one tastes a devotional service, all of them are very easily performed. So, for instance, mona, you know, to stop speaking or to stop speaking nonsense. But if one is always glorifying Krishna, then automatically one is not speaking nonsense, and one is silent materially because one is only speaking spiritually. So he gives that example. So, therefore, those 10 processes for liberation or improvement on the path to liberation are not meant for devotees. If one simply engages in devotional service to the Lord, all 10 methods of liberation are automatically observed. Prahlad Maharaj is saying that such processes may be recommended for the Ajitendriya, those who cannot conquer their senses. Devotees, however, have already conquered their senses. He quotes Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. There are many who like to chant the Hare Krishna mantra in a silent, solitary place, but if one is not interested in preaching, talking constantly to the non-devotees, the influence of the modes of nature is very difficult to surpass. Therefore, unless one is extremely advanced in Krishna consciousness, one should not imitate Haridas Thakur, who had no other business than chanting the holy name always, 24 hours a day. Prahlad Maharaj does not condemn such a process, he accepts it, but without active service to the Lord, simply by such methods, one generally cannot attain liberation. One cannot attain liberation simply by false pride. And here we see that, not only does the preaching, showing compassion to the fallen souls in this material world, exemplify the mood of Srimati Radharani in, looking after Krishna's happiness more so than our own happiness. So we follow in the footsteps of Radharani, we follow in the footsteps of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. That's a very elevated platform of meditation to, perform your devotional service in. But if one is not on that platform, or one can't even understand that platform of Radharani and Krishna's happiness, or that is just too difficult, still the preaching is very important, because preaching is an active engagement of all the senses in Krishna consciousness. And it is better to follow the ways of the Goshinandi than to follow the ways of the Bhajanandi. So even if one is, cannot follow that mood of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Radharani, but in general, for people to perform bhakti, it's better that they actively engage their mind and their senses in speaking about Krishna consciousness to others for their benefit, and in the association of others. So they're preaching to each other, so that those preaching activities give unlimited activity, opening temples and festivals and so many things like that. So we see here that from Prahlad Maharaj's prayers, we're not only picking up that it's very dangerous to follow the path of the Bhajanandi, and quite often those who are following it are not really getting much out of it. Very rarely do they attain liberation. It's better to follow the path of bhakti. And bhakti, if we follow the path of bhakti, the ABCs of bhakti are presented in Bhagavad Gita, where Krishna wants everyone to actually try and show compassion and, help other souls in this world. So actively do that, actively preach. And not only does that bring happiness to Krishna, but it's a very wise path to follow. And And then in our movement, as we said, we do have some bhajananandis like Haridas Thakur, although Haridas Thakur did a lot of preaching. But in his bhajananandi mood, where he chanted most of the day and had a little bit of the day left to preach, we should be very careful to, you know, don't imitate that. It's dangerous. Because the... you know, the deep-rooted desire for sense gratification in this world will catch us out.
Here in this verse, where we say the 10 steps are on the path of liberation, at the same time, at the bottom, you know, he says, you know, the senses, they do not have to conquer the senses will not be conquered. So how can, the question is, how can one get liberation without conquering the senses?
How can one get liberation by conquering the senses?
Without conquering the senses.
No, you can't.
Yeah, so how they are on the path of liberation? They said they do all this, but still, you know, they, the purport is explained by Buddha.
Yeah.
They'll be doing all this 10,
yep.
But still never, they won't be able to conquer the senses. So how they could be on the path of liberation?
Yeah, they're on the path, they're trying to get liberation. Yeah, trying to.
Yeah.
They may not be doing all 10, they may be doing one or two.
But still, it's not the.
Yeah. But it's very difficult to achieve liberation. So they're not liberated, but, you know, they're on the path. That is, it is a path. You know, it's a path for liberation. Just like you know, if you you know, people, you know, go somewhere to get an education. They go to an educational institution. So it's a path of, you know, education, higher knowledge. But some people, you know, get on that path of education because they want to kill people. So it's the path of education, but not everyone on the path of education is there for education. Some of them, you know, some of them to cause harm. They don't like the what the education they're getting. They want to kill people. You know, the path of liberation. It's the path of liberation, but not everyone on that path is there for the same purpose. Some may begin on the path for, you know, the education, and then on that same path they may say, oh, forget the education now, I just want to commit violence. But some people are on the path of liberation and then they say, oh, that's never going to happen. I just keep failing, so let me just, you know, make a good business. Seems to be quite lucrative. Or let me enjoy sense gratification. The Prabhupada says that, you know, there are many people who retire from family life and they go to the holy places. And they then engage in sex life with the widows. And, you know, and there are other, there are some ladies who go to those holy places and think, if I, you know, engage in sex life with these holy people, I'll get a nice child, you know. So he's explaining they're both cheating each other. Because so the holy places are not meant for that, but you know, you get people going to the holy place and they're just all cheating each other. But it's not meant for that. So they're on the path of liberation, but It doesn't mean that they'll achieve liberation, and then sometimes on that path they can actually forget about liberation and take up other things that are beneficial while they're on that path. Which is as and that's what Prahlad Maharaj is saying, you know, that what's deep down in the heart will gradually surface. Even you're on that path, it'll come back up, and then you'll end up, you're on that path, but you're doing a whole other sort of nonsense. So, verse 47, by authorized Vedic knowledge, one can see that the forms of cause and effect in the cosmic manifestation belong to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, for the cosmic manifestation is His energy. Both cause and effect are nothing but energies of the Lord. Therefore, O my Lord, just as a wise man, by considering cause and effect, can see how fire pervades wood, those engaged in devotional service understand how you are both the cause and effect. Purport. As described in previous verses, many so-called students of spiritual understanding follow the 10 different methods known as Mauna Brata, etc. These may be very attractive, but by following such methods, one cannot actually understand the real cause and effect and the original cause of everything. Janmadyashayataha. The original source of everything is the Supreme Personality of Godhead Himself. Sarvakaranakaranam. This original source of everything is Krishna, the Supreme Ruler. He has His eternal spiritual form. Indeed, He is the root of everything. Whatever manifestation exists, the cause is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This cannot be understood by so-called silence or by any other hodgepodge method. The Supreme Cause can be understood only by devotional service, as stated in Bhagavad Gita. Elsewhere in Srimad Bhagavatam, the Supreme Personality of Godhead personally says, one can understand the original cause of all causes, the Supreme Person, only by devotional service, not by shabbat or exhibitionism. So, apart from the in our line, following Prahlad Maharaj, this great Vaishnava in the Gosyanandi mood, which epitomizes the mood of Shamata Radharani, serving Krishna for His happiness. And apart from that, the mood of preaching is has a lot of practical benefits for devotees, because the act of engagements means that their senses are fully satisfied, and they're getting transcendental bliss by the engagement of their senses, and therefore they're not trying to stop the senses. And then have the, from the heart, some, desire for happiness from engagement of the senses, coming out of their heart and looking for material engagement. Now, apart from those, Prahlad Maharaj is also pointing out that by engagement in devotional service in this practical way, which is very safe and very satisfying and destroys the desire for sense gratification within the heart, apart from all of that, it's the only way you can understand the Personality of Godhead. And those other 10 methods can't yield that. And of course, if they can't yield that, therefore they can't yield the transcendental bliss required to, the higher taste. So the very similar verse here, to that verse 2:59, Vishaya Vinivartante. So, you know, one must experience a higher taste, and we get that higher taste from, you know, actually all our senses being enlivened by full realization of Krishna, the personality of Godhead, and our eternal loving relationship with him. So then that higher taste is there. So in essence, not only does one achieve liberation very easily, automatically, by engagement in devotional service, all these other processes are automatically done, and one gets liberation, which is rarely achieved by others who don't perform the devotional service. But that liberation is a very exalted transcendental liberation, where one has a transcendental blissful experience of the personality of Godhead and realization of the and that loving exchange with him, like that. So he's really he wants to help the conditioned souls, and again he's promoting perform this devotional service, like that. Even if one doesn't have the natural compassion of Prahlad Maharaj, he's still saying, do it anyway, because you'll realize the personality of God. You get that transcendental taste, you'll get liberation, and you'll be on a very safe and blissful path like that. So even if you don't have that compassion, still do it. Still preach Krishna consciousness. And therefore, you can also see, you know, the Srila Prabhupada has established this International Society for Krishna Consciousness based on all of these different principles like that. These verses are at the heart of it. Verse 48, O Supreme Lord, you are actually the air, the earth, fire, sky and water. You are the objects of sense perception, the life airs, the five senses, the mind, consciousness and false ego. Indeed, you are everything subtle and gross, the material elements and anything expressed either by the words or by the mind are nothing but you. So Srila Prabhupada explains in his purport, this is the all-pervasive conception of the personality of Godhead, which explains how he spreads everywhere and anywhere. Sarvam kalvidam brahma. Everything is Brahman, the supreme Brahman, Krishna. Nothing exists without him. As the Lord says in Bhagavad Gita 9.4, I exist everywhere and everything exists in me, and yet I am not visible everywhere. The Lord can be visible only through devotional service. The Supreme Lord stays only where his devotees chant his glories. So Prahlad Maharaj has emphasized the Lord is everywhere. He had that, you know, that level of Krishna consciousness. Hiranyakasipu wanted to kill him, and he was quite confident that because the Lord is everywhere, he could only be killed if the Lord allowed it, and if the Lord wanted to protect him, which the Lord likes to do, because that's the words of Narada Muni, then he could not kill him. So, therefore, you know, Hiranyakashipu, is he in this pillar? And based upon this, yes, he is. How is Prahlad Maharaj able to feel confident that the Lord is there within the pillar? Because he's performed devotional service, and by performance of devotional service, the Lord will reveal to his devotees that, yes, I am in this atom, I am in every atom, I am in the heart of every living entity. So Prahlad was performing devotional service. He was preaching Krishna consciousness, as you know, he was instructed to by Narada Muni. And by that, he could actually perceive that Krishna is everywhere, you know, he's like that. So he's explaining this is the philosophy and this is actually, you know, what happened. And so he's offering that back as a prayer to the Lord. This is your glory. You know, you are everywhere. And by the performance of devotional service to you, you are so glorious that if one does a little service for you, you know, a person will perceive that, which Prahlad did. So that's the glory. You know, these prayers are all glorifying Lord Narasimha, Krishna. You know, these are all your glories. You are everywhere. The Vedas say that you're in every atom, in the heart of every living entity, and you appeared from a pillar. And how was I to see that? Because I did a little service, especially a little preaching, and you are so powerful. Just by that, I attained this spiritual liberation where I was able to perceive the absolute truth and be completely above, liberated from all material fear and anxiety like that. So, you know, Prahlad's actions are a demonstration of the glories of the Lord and devotional service to the Lord and the Vaishnavas. You know. So this philosophy that he's speaking is the, you know, what is in the consciousness of an elevated devotee. The philosophy he's speaking is the glories of the Lord. Those glories of the Lord, one who understands that is called Krishna consciousness. So this is Prahlad's Krishna consciousness. Prahlad's Krishna consciousness means, you know, Prahlad's understanding of the glories of the Lord. And but it's not just an empty philosophy, because it actually, as he is saying, the Lord is everywhere, and Prahlad did see it by devotional service. And that. So it's not a false glorification he's offering. He's speaking exactly from personal experience, and his personal experience is exactly what all the scriptures and the Lord himself proclaims everywhere. Now that's very difficult to understand, because as we heard in the previous verse, you know, he's a person. Ishvaraha Parama Krishna Satchidananda Vigraha. He has an eternal spiritual form. So, you know, this is what Prahlad is trying to prove. One cannot understand how, you know, a person can be everywhere. Prahlad saying, yes, Krishna is a person, he has a form, he appears in different forms such as Nrisimha, Varaha, Hayagriva. Don't take this as a material manifestation. This form is all-pervading. And if you perform devotional service, you'll understand, how is that form of the Lord all-pervading? Because his energies, nothing everything is just his energy. Every cause and effect is just his energy. Coming from that personal form. Yes.
But you're still here in front of me.
That's right, yeah.
Still a person.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
you just appear from here,
yeah,
but you're actually everywhere.
So that's the difficulty. You know, one who engages in devotional service, they can understand that. Otherwise, without devotional service, connection to the form, you know, what is here, there, and everywhere, cannot be connected to any form. Any form at all. And only by devotional service do we say, yes, here's a form in a Sringa, right in front of me, and everything that is spread throughout all material and spiritual creation is the energy from that form, which is not different from him. So, and that, it is that concept which is only understood by devotional service. So, you know, therefore, you know, devotees who are fully convinced of that, and, you know, who preach, even taking great risk to preach, you know, you know, quite remarkable. It is inconceivable. You know, if you think of it, so, you know, Srila Prabhupada, you know, travelling from India, coming to the Western world, you have all these scholars from the universities and philosophers and politicians and intellectuals, and Prabhupada's saying, that little blue boy in this picture with the peacock feather, with the bare feet, walking around barefoot in this forest, he is the source of all this. You see, it's quite inconceivable, isn't it, you know? So you imagine, you know, just, you know, how unlikely it is that anyone would ever accept that, right? Just how unlikely that you travel from a different country and you say there's a bluish boy who used to live in India thousands and thousands of years, you know, amongst all the folklore and legends, but this little boy, he's the source of everything. He's controlling you, you know. It's just so inconceivable that anyone at all, even one person, would accept it. So that's, you know, that's... and Prabhupada, obviously, you know, for at his age, you know, at nearly 70, to go to risk his life to travel without any money, so convinced... No, this little boy, you listen to me. You know, he's the source of it. So, now, and of course, but what Prabhupada understood is what Prahlad is saying, that, okay, you may not understand that, but if you perform devotional service, that Krishna will interact with you as a person. And you'll see how he can utilize everything, the material world and everything, in such a way to show you that, yes, he is a person, he's accepted your offerings, and he is relieving you of your karma, and he is helping you to attain liberation, which cannot be, you know, gained even by the great sages, you know, who are endeavoring with all these difficult processes, and somehow... You're serving this little blue boy, Krishna, and you've achieved, you're achieving this liberation, you're achieving this freedom and transcendental knowledge. So, you know, then one begins to understand. You know, I always remember, you know, my first day as a devotee, because, you know, literally, you know, as we mentioned, talking about hippies before, you know, smoking, drinking, you know, eating meat, everything, the day I joined, you know, and the next day I stopped everything. And I kept thinking, the cravings will come, and they were, you know, because I was addicted to so many different things, the cravings will come and they'll drive me, I'll get the heebie-jeebies, but they never did. And you know, I had tried for years to stop any of my bad habits. I only got worse. And, you know, then one day, you know, start eat prasad, chant Hare Krishna, and it's all gone. And I understood, well, you know, there's something just absolutely remarkable. You know, there's something spiritual. You know, it actually works. So and this is what Prahlad is saying. You know, it's very difficult to conceive that, you know, here is this person, and sometimes this person appears like a boar or got a horse's head, you know. But he's the same person, and everything is coming from him. But if you find that difficult, but if you engage in devotional service, you'll achieve liberation, which is the first sign that it's actually a fact. And on top of that, you'll get realization how you're interacting with the personality of God in a very friendly way. And you'll see his presence, how he's utilizing his energies in a very friendly way. I know. So this is what Prahlad Maharaj is pointing out. Yeah. But if we don't engage in that devotional service with Krishna, it's not possible. Otherwise, it won't happen. Yeah. You cannot conceive. You not understand, you not get the liberation, you not get the higher taste, none of those things. Yeah, come. So, you know, sometimes when we're reading these verses, and then you come to a verse like this where it says, you are air, you are earth, you are fire, you think, it's almost like you're going backwards, you know. We've come up to the, you know, we're talking about the personality of Godhead and Bhakti. Now we're saying your air. It's almost like, where did that come from, you know? But it is that conception that, you know, you, the person, you are these things. This is your energy. So we're still on that, you know, that point. You imagine, you know, reading this verse without really having proper context of, you know, where we're at in since the start of this whole chapter, you know, a devotee wouldn't quite have the same ability to properly give justice to this verse in a class. Neither the three modes of material nature nor the predominating deities controlling these three modes nor the five gross elements nor the mind nor the demigods nor the human beings can understand your lordship, for they are all subjected to birth and annihilation. Considering this, the spiritually advanced have taken to devotional service. Such wise men hardly bother with Vedic study. Indeed, they engage themselves in practical devotional service. Purport. As stated in several places, Bhaktimama Abhijanati, only by devotional service can the Supreme Lord be understood. The unintelligent person, the devotee, does not bother much about the practices mentioned in text 46, Mona Bratra, etc. After understanding the Supreme Lord through devotional service, such devotees are no longer interested in studies of the Vedas. Indeed, this is confirmed in the Vedas also. The Vedas say, what is the use of studying so many Vedic literatures? What is the use of explaining them in different ways? No one needs to study any more Vedic literatures, nor does anyone need to describe them by philosophical speculation. Bhagavad Gita 252 also says, when one understands the Supreme Personality of Godhead by executing devotional service, one ceases to practice the practice of studying the Vedic literature. Elsewhere, as it said, Arārito yadi harishta pasyatatākin, if one can understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead and engage in his service, there is no more need of severe austerities, penances, and so on. However, if after performing severe austerities and penances one does not understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead, such practices are useless. So, very interesting verse here. And so you can imagine, you know, preaching. Of course, originally, you know, when I was preaching with the devotees in ISKCON, we weren't preaching to a lot of the Indian community, mostly Westerners in this part of the world. Most of the Hindu community didn't really want to know us. They thought we were doing something quite strange, you know, because for a lot of them, they were following the different 10 processes of the Vedas, you know, the Vedas for liberation. They really could not understand, you know, even though they knew about Krishna, but, you know, they didn't really accept him as the Supreme Person of Godhead. And so, you know, they were, you know, a lot of different things, those 10 different processes are very important to them, and Sanskrit prayers and, you know, this, that and the other, and ritual. But we didn't preach a lot to them in those days, but mostly to Westerners. And for the Westerners, a lot of our preaching was somehow, because a lot of people didn't want to listen to a Hare Krishna, a lot of it was just to somehow engage them in bhakti. And we knew that if we somehow or another got them to do something to help establish this Krishna consciousness movement in the future, those, you know, each time we, you know, more and more, they heard us on the street, they gave a donation, they read a book, they had some prasadam. Gradually, they would, you know, be inclined to devotional service, which, you know, we do see now. Now it's very interesting because, you know, I do preach to a lot of, you know, the Hindu community. But I do see that still not a lot has changed in one sense. A lot more people tend to accept Krishna, but still there is this, they're more interested in Vedic things, you know, a Vedic ritual, or a little Vedic understanding, or, you know, they have some interest in some Vedic thing somewhere, which has very little value to them or anyone else. From our perspective, still, we just try to engage them. You know, quite often when I go to a home program, and people will say so many different things, and I don't correct much, and I don't explain much. And sometimes I don't say a lot about Krishna. Still, for a lot of them, if I can just engage them, directly in bhakti, somehow if we can engage them, they can join in with me. So I try and perform some bhakti, and then if they can join in with me, I know that that's the best thing that's going to happen, because Krishna will actually reveal himself to them through that, which is, you know, what Prahlad Maharaj is saying. Where we do get questions and that people want to know, then of course there's opportunities there. You know, those opportunities are there, which is very good. And that's coming from their past, Agata Sakriti, somewhere in this life, previous life. So, you know, I may be sitting there and people may be talking about something connected with the Vedas. And our interest, we have very little interest. You know, for them, because it's Vedic, that's the big interest. Or, you know, here's my Vedic connection. It could be Ayurveda, it could be this. We have very little interest, you know. You know, we sort of want to, you know, help them somehow to connect with Krishna and understand Krishna. That's our real interest. But, you know, we take interest to the degree that somehow or another we strike up a friendship, and sometimes the conversations in the Vedas, you know, there's always a way that you can gradually introduce a little bit of Krishna consciousness. And as we said, you know, they may have some Vedic interest, and we can show how by automatically by doing devotional service, yes, you're going to get the same result. We'll do a little kirtan, and what your interest is there in that Vedic, you'll see you'll get that result. You'll get that result from Prasadam. So they have a Vedic interest, and what we're doing is we're showing them, as you engage in devotional service, you know, that where your Vedic interest, automatically you'll get that. And then you point that out to them, and they see that, yes. And then you see these little children, you know, who are, you know, not interested in anything Vedic, anything spiritual. And the people can see that we're doing a little chanting and this, that, and the other, and these children are like sitting there like sadhus with their minds and senses completely controlled, and they're thinking, how is this even happening? And they can see it's working, you know. They've got the mind controlled. They're sitting silently. You've done that by getting them to chant, by, you know, telling stories about, like that. So they see that what they're interested in has been achieved in quite a miraculous way for themselves and others there through the little things that we do in Krishna consciousness. So that's how we preach. We just keep presenting the Krishna consciousness because we know it'll work. What you're looking for with your Vedic connection, we'll do a little Krishna consciousness and you'll see you'll get the results. And you'll see that everyone will get quite an amazing result by the grace of Krishna, that, you know, it'll be quite something. You'll hold that, you know, time spent in Krishna consciousness with a devotee, something, a very sacred part of your life. You know, there was something wonderful happened there, that, and you perceive Krishna's presence. That, you know, when a devotee is in someone's house, when the devotee leaves, the devotee should feel, yes, they perceive Krishna's presence. You know, that's preaching, you know, you feel like that. Yes, you know, they felt the presence of Krishna, something quite spiritual actually happened. There's not some artificial, you know, just intellectualism and nothing.
You mentioned that we show them that, even according to this verse, that whatever we perform, we use 10 methods mentioned, same results can be achieved. But usually we... Vedic intentions are mainly to fulfill material motives instead. So how do you tell in practical way someone that, you know, because people are generally they want to get a tangible result.
So for instance, say like say housewarming, right? They want their house to be blessed. You know, so that they can live there happily, enjoy their sense gratification in their new home. So they want the priest to bless them. And so I do, you know, we do explain that ultimately all religious principles help us to get out of the cycle of birth and death. And because we can't stay in this house forever, you know, you can't stay in a house forever. So ultimately, you want to, you know, they want to live happily and peacefully there and protected. But in the end, they don't want to go through the whole process again. Another body, another hand. So I do explain that by the performance of the ceremony that the karmic results, good or bad, for performing one's duty and providing a house to enjoy for the family, that the karmic results of that is removed, and one is not forced to take birth again as a result of performing the activities of getting that house. So, as an example, so therefore, I usually first of all, try and point out this is the actual result of Vedic ceremony, so that you really, so we don't, you don't necessarily talk in terms of moksha or liberation, although usually you say moksha, they go, oh yeah, moksha, 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 yeah, they all know moksha, But I usually just say, not liberation or anything, because I don't know what it means, but I just say, you're not forced to take birth again, and they immediately pick up on that, oh, that's good, So, I know when I point that out, it's a lot more than what they were expecting to get from that ceremony. They didn't expect that. Oh, that's a bonus, not having to take birth again. I didn't even realise it, but when you think about it, karma, I have to take birth for my good and my bad. And I don't have to now, So that's quite a big one. So I usually point out for them that religious, you're not necessarily going through a whole dialogue of, what is the purpose of the Vedas. But when you say that, it just clicks. Oh, yeah, of course, religious principles, Ultimately, that's the main thing. You don't have to take birth again. It can be done, within one sentence, really. You can... See, this is the thing with, what... Prahlad, is presenting here. We have no real interest, so we're not going to sit there for hours and hours talking about the Vedic this and the Vedic that and this, that and the other, and we really, there's just a couple of things they need to hear, and that's our interest. So we take the first opportunity, so you listen, and you think, okay, they've confused themselves and that's their limit. There's a little opportunity here. So, it's like if you watch football, like rugby or basketball or Australian rules, the goal is, the secret is never take your eye off the ball. Huh? Isn't it? Never take your eye off the ball. Wherever it goes, you see them playing. They all chase that, and their attention. So it doesn't matter what goes on. Sometimes they're running headlong into danger and everything, but they will not take their eye off the ball. So devotees like that, the devotee has an. So if you want to win that game, your interest is to get that ball, kick a goal. You're not concerned. Oh, I like the colours of your, team. And what sort of boots are you wearing? And you've tied your lace in a double knot. I like that. And tucked him in the side. And how's the family? And it's a beautiful day. I like this oval. Look what they've done with the grass. You don't get distracted. Where's that ball? Huh? Because I'm going to get it, I'm going to kick a goal. See? So, in other words, a good footballer, it's not like they're not interested in, in one sense they're not interested in anything, and yet that is their whole life. So a devotee is like that. It's not as if they're not interested, it's your whole life, but where's the ball, how do you... So it's no matter what's going on, Prahlad is saying that there's a focus of the devotee on Krishna. and they're just going to, you know, to kick a goal here and there, you know, at the right. And when, you know, the devotee, when they meet with someone or leave that place, that, you know, yes, the opportunity to engage him in devotional service was there, and I took it. I didn't waste my time, you know, chatter, and miss the opportunity to engage them in chanting or having prasadam or something. You're there for 5 minutes, you're there for an hour, and as much devotional service as you can get them into to do without being sidetracked by all sorts of things that really are that. And at the same time, while doing that, you know, you see, you know, people who play football, you know, they always give the impression that, oh, no, I'm not really interested in that ball. The ball's going, oh, he's over there, he's not in it. Oh, boy, he's got it, where did he come from? You know, like that. So, it, you know, there's an intensity about the devotee, but he doesn't, you know, or she, you know, doesn't express it to everyone. So, you know, people's not thinking, oh, you're just fixed on Krishna like that. It's almost like, you know, when Prabhupada preaches, you see in his lectures, you know, he sort of, you know, so many things, but, you know, there's an intensity there, you know, that we know. You know, Prabhupada's, you know, counting every second, looking at every opportunity like that, and he, you know, but if you see him from an external, he's just having a little chat with some people who's popped in, you know, come up to say hello to the sadhu, you know. So it's like that. So not interested, but you know, to give the impression that you're not interested in what anyone's doing, and you know, then that will spoil an opportunity for preaching, because then, you know, that people become offended, or you know sometimes feel insulted, or you know, feel, oh, you're only interested in Krishna, you're not interested in anything we've got to say, you know, like that. So, you know, and it can be like that if you're preaching. And I find that with a lot of Hindu families, if I give the impression I'm only interested in Krishna, you really spoil your opportunities of preaching. You know? So it's almost like it just got to pop in here and there, but from our perspective, that's the ball, you know, we're watching. So, very interesting. So, therefore, O Supreme Person of Godhead, the best of all persons to whom prayers are offered, I offer my respectful obeisances unto you, because without rendering six kinds of devotional service unto you, offering prayers, dedicating all the results of activities, worshipping you, working on your behalf, always remembering your lotus feet and hearing about your glories, who can achieve that which is meant for the Paramahamsas? So, one cannot understand the Supreme Person of Godhead simply by studying the Vedas or offering prayers. Only by the grace of the Supreme Lord can one understand him. The process of understanding the Lord, therefore, is bhakti. Without bhakti, simply following the Vedic injunctions to understand the absolute truth would not at all be helpful. Would not be helpful at all. The process of bhakti is understood by the Paramahamsas, one who has accepted the essence of everything. Other processes such as jnana and yoga can be successful only when mixed with bhakti. Prabhupada says, speaking of those other processes, the word yoga indicates bhakti. Bhakti yoga or buddhi yoga executed with intelligence and full knowledge is the only successful method of going back home, back to Godhead. The great sage Narada said thus, Nrisingadeva was pacified by the devotee Prahlad Maharaj with prayers offered from the transcendental platform. The Lord gave up his anger, and being very kind to Balad, who was offering prostrate obeisances, he spoke as follows. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, "My dear Balad, most gentle one, best of the family of the Asuras, all good fortune unto you. I am very much pleased with you. It is my pastime to fulfill the desires of all living beings. And therefore you may ask from me any benediction that you desire to be fulfilled." It says, if we approach the Supreme Lord or his devotees, or if we are blessed by a devotee, naturally we'll be automatically achieve the benedictions of the Supreme Lord. Yasya prasada bhagavat prasada. If one pleases the Vaishnava spiritual master, all of one's desires will be fulfilled. My dear Prahlad, may you live a long time. One cannot appreciate or understand me without pleasing me. But one who has seen or pleased me has nothing more for which to lament for his own satisfaction. My dear Prahlad, you are very fortunate. Please know from me that those who are very wise and highly elevated try to please me in all different modes and of mellows, for I am the only person who can fulfil all the desires of everyone. Narada Muni said, Prahlad Maharaj was the best person in the family of Asuras who always aspired for material happiness. Nonetheless, although allured by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who offered him all benedictions for material happiness, because of his unalloyed Krishna consciousness, he did not want to take any material benefit for sense gratification. Can you just pause that? I'm just going to go to the bathroom for a moment. How are we going for time? I'll just take 1 minute. And then
all these prayers are so nice. Is there something that you recommend we can memorize from this?
Yeah. Yes. The qualities of a Vaishnava. Prahlad Maharaj represents everything a devotee should aspire for to be, you know, in ISKCON. Very humble, completely convinced in the personality of Godhead, you know, God is a person, and the cause of all causes, and then the understanding of, so Prahlad Maharaj's qualities and conviction, and his application of the philosophy, you know, that bhakti will deliver everyone in this world. It is, and it's best when it's there's practical engagement in preaching for people, you know. So they're the very emblem of Srila Prabhupada's ISKCON. You know, it's a standout feature of Srila Prabhupada that as he travelled around the world, he, you know, he wasn't necessarily going to try and philosophically defeat everyone, or, you know, debate about the Vedas, or, you know, Srila Prabhupada just wanted to take the first opportunity to engage people in Krishna service in a very easily attractive way that they would like to, you know, engage in Krishna service. So, you know, it's a standout feature of Srila Prabhupada's application of, everything that we've read here. Literally just try and engage people in bhakti, because Krishna is God, although he's a person, he's the Supreme Person of Godhead, and everything is a manifestation of his energy. So, and if you engage, if someone engages in Krishna's service, they connect with Krishna, that is called yoga. And So if there's some tinge, there's some quality of bhakti, they will get such powerful results of rising above their sense gratification. They'll get powerful results in self-realization. They'll get powerful results in God realization, and they'll be able to go back to Godhead. So everything we see, everything that this, the all of these prayers that we see, we've spent a month or 2 months studying. You just have to look at what Prabhupada did, and Prabhupada is just the perfect example of Prahlad Maharaj's teachings. Somehow or another present bhakti above everything else. Somehow or another engage people, and if they connect with Krishna, Krishna will reveal himself to them. And when he reveals himself to them, they'll become liberated automatically. And, they'll control their mind and senses, and they'll feel transcendental bliss, and they'll go back to God. So somehow or another, just engage people, practically. And as Lord Chaitanya showed us, in Kali Yuga, principally, get people to chant Hare Krishna, take some prasadam, and to chant, join in on the festivals. And, if they're able to, if from doing that they also literally get some inspiration in Krishna consciousness, and then help, let them also join in on helping others to do the same thing. Yeah. So Srila Prabhupada's, he is literally, if someone said to me, oh, Srila Prabhupada is Prahlad Maharaj, it wouldn't surprise me at all, because he's doing everything that Prahlad Maharaj is talking about. He's seeing Krishna everywhere. Krishna is everywhere. He's in Moscow. He's in China. He's in Australia. Everything that that Prahlad Maharaj discussed, Srila Prabhupada, his teachings, his activities, he is the practical application, the living representative of Prahlad Maharaj. So it just makes it very easy. So, for us, this philosophy, if we read this philosophy without ever having known Prabhupada, we really couldn't assimilate it as well as, to the degree that we have. It is because Srila Prabhupada epitomizes everything. That he's the teachings of Prahlad Maharaj in motion, the personified teaching, like that. And because we see what he did, which is exactly what Prahlad is saying, therefore it's easy for us to understand because we have the living example. So, the converse is true, is that we should really understand the glories of Srila Prabhupada, that what he did is strictly in accordance with the topmost teachings of the Bhagavatam and the Vedas, like that. So, one, we can understand the teachings of personalities like Prahlad because we just see what Prabhupada did. And two, seeing what Srila Prabhupada did, we understand that, there's no deviation. There's nothing new, there's nothing changed, there's nothing speculative. It is exactly what Prahlad taught about. It is exactly, the teachings, the essence of the Vedas, like that. So it should confirm our complete faith in Srila Prabhupada and ISKCON. In ISKCON, we have to deal with a lot of different personalities, and sometimes we have unfavorable dealings. Sometimes with our peers, sometimes with people we're preaching to, sometimes society in general, sometimes authorities. Sometimes our family members. We want to be Krishna conscious and they don't. But So sometimes we do see that, you know, many people come and go from ISKCON, some, but not a lot of them, you know, fully see the authenticity of ISKCON for what it is. You know, so a lot of people, if they come to ISKCON, even if they, you know, had some understanding, a little understanding, you know, somehow or another what Prahlad was saying, they may not draw a connection between ISKCON and Prahlad Maharaj and Hirani Kasipu. or Srila Prabhupada. But actually, properly understanding the prayers of Prahlad Maharaj and these pastimes, we should understand the authenticity of ISKCON and of Srila Prabhupada. And also that so what Prahlad is saying, Prabhupada did it, and look how powerful it is. So Prahlad's saying, just engage him in bhakti. They'll feel the presence of Krishna and they'll understand, oh, he's a person, you know, and he's interacting with me. And that's exactly what Prabhupada did. He started an international movement and centres all over the world. So, you know, we study these books not to become, you know, yes, I am a big philosopher, I've got the Bhakti Vaibhava, I've got the Bhakti Vedanta. You know, what we're doing, you know, we study because we want to be able to serve Srila Prabhupada and Krishna, you know, in a very, you know, as a, just a, you know, a proper disciple, you know, a proper servant. That's all we want. So from reading this, you know, we understand, yes, I can be a proper servant of Srila Prabhupada and of Krishna because I have full faith that, you know, that Krishna is God, and I have full faith that Srila Prabhupada perfectly represents Prahlad Maharaj. Yes, I can, you know, that helps me to be situated with great faith and determination like that. So, you know, that's what we want. We don't, as Prahlad, he didn't want any other benediction, you know. As I said, we're not trying to be guru, we're not trying to be this, but it also helps us to understand that, you know, when we see people suffering in this world, that we can be confident, you know. Let's give them, you know, bhakti, you know. Let's not waste our time with so many other things. Let's somehow or another give them bhakti. That's really what they need. That will solve all their problems. So let's, you know, preach Krishna consciousness.
Oh, I just actually have a question that, because there are so many verses in this chapter, and they are all good verses in a sense, because they are the prayers that we could offer to the Lord. Are there any verses in particular that, in some important verses that we could memorize and use them?
Yeah. Here in these last verses, it, you know, just to answer that question, it explains how that, you know, I'll read that purport to verse 52. It says, the Supreme Personality of Godhead is known as Bhakta Vatsala. The Supreme Personality who is very much affectionate to his devotees. So the Lord himself is saying, it's my pastime to fulfill the desires of all living beings. You know, that's his pastime. What to speak of his devotees? The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, in effect, I fulfill the desires of everyone. Since you are my devotee, whatever you want for yourself will naturally be given. But if you pray for anyone else, that prayer also will be fulfilled. Thus, if we approach the Supreme Lord or his devotee, or if we are blessed by a devotee, naturally, we will automatically achieve the benedictions of the Supreme Lord. So we may not even ask for anything. But if we get the blessings of the devotee, especially Yashap Prasada Bhagavat Prasada, all one's desires will be fulfilled. So, therefore, you imagine how pleased Prahlad Maharaj would be that we take the time to listen to him, to hear him. you know, is what any parent wants, you know, for their for their child, you know, their child to listen to them. Is it? You know, sometimes it just, you know, for a parent, sometimes it really surprises you, you know, when the child actually enthusiastically just, you know, wants to hear, what do you want to tell me, Dad or Mum? You know, can you tell me? I'm listening very carefully. I really want to know, you know. So when we hear these prayers by Prahlad Maharaj, you know, he just gives so much benediction. He becomes so pleased with us. Chitete kuriya arya. Our only wish is to have a consciousness purified by the words emanating from the lotus mouth of the spiritual master. In that prayer that we sing every morning, that's the desire of the devotee. I want to please the spiritual master. And if we have that desire, then those verses are saying everything is fulfilled. You know, you get spiritual knowledge, you get prema bhakti, everything is there like that. What is our wish? We just want to have our consciousness purified by hearing the words emanating. So that's what we're doing here with Prahlad Maharaj. You know, we just want our consciousness to be purified by hearing Prahlad Maharaj, and we get the full benediction of Prahlad Maharaj, just like that. That's our own result. So you can meditate on one, you can meditate on some, you know. You can meditate on them all, you can teach them to others and preach. Vishwanath Chakrabarty, the core, in one purport, I forget where it was, but he was explaining that, you know, certain persons get certain levels of benefit. The person who speaks, he says, and explains it, gets the most. The persons who inquire, so they're listening, but they're also inquiring very intelligently, they get the next most. Persons who are hearing, generally, are also, then they're getting the next most. And then others who, you know, may not be hearing attentively, somehow they're present. But he explains that, you know, so when you, if you try and present the teachings of Prahlad Maharaj to others, then you get the most benefit of that. So, it doesn't matter, you know, it doesn't matter whether you, you know, go through your entire life explaining one verse or all of them, you get the same benefit. But, you know, what you generally find, you know, as Prabhupada did, that there are certain verses amongst these which he used again and again and again in nearly every situation, and then there are some which, you know, he used in particular situations, you know, like the itch and this and that. So you know, where, for instance, you may also, I know when I got different shalagrams, and the one that I got from my spiritual master, you know, he said offer prayers as well. So then, you know, so I then selected a variety of different prayers, of which, you know, I sometimes offer one or two of those specific prayers to that particular deity. So you can sometimes, so in the worship of Lord Narasimha, you can offer a prayer, one of Prahlad's prayers to Narasimha, like, you know, I only want to be you know, engaged in this servant, as a servant of your you know, your devotees, like that. You know, to learn one like that, which is sort of the essence of Prahlad's mood, and, you know, it sums up everything. I mean, You know, that is bhakti yoga. We want to be engaged in bhakti yoga, and to be bhakti yogi is not directly engaged, but, you know, coming in the line of Prahlad, the servant like that. You know, to offer, to learn one of them, and to, you know, just to offer them when you offer your obeisances to Narasimha, or, you know, or Krishna, like that. So, yeah, you might select a particular one which is a personal favourite, which just really sums up. And, you know, we all have different connections. I know because, you know, when I was initiated, originally I was called Gangadas. Now I'm Gangishvara. But, so I've always been attracted to that verse. By, there's one by Queen Kunti, and then there's one by another that, you know, made my mind always, just as Ganges always flows down to the sea, you know, unobstructed and naturally like that, may my mind always be attracted to your lotus feet like that. So, you know, it's a very, but it's the connection with the Ganges that, but somehow or another, you know, that really just sums up everything in Krishna consciousness to me, that, you know, if my mind can just naturally always just flow to Krishna's lotus feet, you know, just like the Ganges, it's just always flowing to the sea, it never stops, nothing obstructs it, you know, just very powerful and just keep flowing in that direction. If my mind would do that, at that, you know, it's just, that, you know, a lot of love and devotion just flowing like that, never stops. You know, then I think I was a devotee. You know, to me it sums up everything. So, you know, there are particular verses which, you know, may attract us according to, you know, our mood and different circumstances of our devotional life like that. So you can select one. It's nice, yeah. But the fact that we're, you know, allowing our consciousness to always be, you know, purified by the words of Prahlad Maharaj, who is so dear to the Lord, it immediately attracts the full blessings of the Lord, who's already inclined to give his benedictions to every living entity. What to speak, a devotee who's, you know, always, you know, got their mind at the lotus feet of Prahlad Maharaj. And of course, you know, we should understand also that Srila Prabhupada is our, you know, representative in this day. I mean, this is millions of years ago, and there'd be, you know, Prahlad Maharaj would especially, you know, like it that, you know, when we're offering that prayer, you know, we're you know, we want to offer some service, you know, that we want to be purified by hearing those instructions and picking up that Krishna consciousness from Prahlad. But when it comes through Srila Prabhupada, we get it in the best way, the best format for us. Like that. Yeah. So those prayers can be offered, you know, the prayers and prayers for service can be offered to Prahlad via Srila Prabhupada direct, you know, directly. And Srila Prabhupada's representative means, you know, his, you know, disciples and, you know, grand disciples who become initiating gurus. And also to the, you know, the various Shiksha gurus, you know, who represent Srila Prabhupada, you know, properly in our movement like that. Because, you know, as I explained, we have our central Shiksha guru, but we also have very, you know, many wonderful Shiksha gurus. Srila Prabhupada is, you know, a Vaishnava whose transcendental qualities and activities are just all-encompassing. And what you find is that the various ecstatic Vaishnavas in ISKCON, you know, some of them more, you know, very strongly represent this quality of Prabhupada, and some others represent that quality. Some represent, you know, this particular, you know, preaching skill Srila Prabhupada had, and some, so, you know, they're almost like, you know, sometimes you have, you know, children that, like, you know, they represent, they're like the mother and the father, but all in their own individual way. But you can see, oh, he's so much like his father, so much like the mother. So, you know, these Vaishnavas are like that. You know, they encompass, they manifest some of the glories of Srila Prabhupada, Prahlad Maharaj, to some degree. But, we want to, those prayers, I think, where we're taking shelter of Prahlad Maharaj through Srila Prabhupada and his various representatives. It's very nice, yeah. You know, how many people in this world, amongst billions and billions of people, will take the time to listen to the entirety of Prahlad's, you know. Even in India, where they know Nrisimha, they know Prahlad, how many people, you know, from India in this current day, apart from in ISKCON, would have actually read those prayers with such intensity and depth. You know? So the fact that we've done that makes our entire life completely successful. Although we're not after benedictions, they're there. And the fact that we've done that at the lotus feet of Srila Prabhupada, who's very, very dear to Prahlad Maharaj, makes it all... So we're not only getting Prahlad Maharaj's benedictions, we're getting the benedictions of all the acharyas who represented Prahlad right down to now. It's quite wonderful. All right, let's leave it there. So next week we'll have a look at chapter 10, which, you know, finishes this and it's entitled Prahlad, the best among exalted devotees. There are 47 verses. Just having a quick browse from... especially towards the end there, not a lot of purports and some very... So, you know, it most likely we will finish that by the looks of it next week. We'll finish that. Thank you all for coming. Hare Krishna. Jai. Bhakti Vedantis, how many of us have started to come along?